I'm Jake Lawrence. This is K103.7 FM Radio. And on the line with me, John McPhee from the Doobie Brothers, who are in town next Saturday on October the 8th. Hi, John, and thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, you're going to be in town next week. I want to start off back in 1987, the Doobie Brothers reunited. Was it yourself, Tom Johnson, and Patrick Simmons that reunited the band?
Well, it all started actually with our longtime drummer, Keith Knudsen, who unfortunately passed away a few years ago now. But
okay.
Keith had called us all about getting together to do a benefit show for an organization that was at that time called the Vietnam Veterans Aid Foundation, and it's now the National Veterans Foundation.
Okay.
And it was to help, try to help out, veterans coming back, you know, and not really being that well taken care of by the U.S. government back home.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what pulled us all back together, actually. Yeah. Keith was the guy that called us all, and we all got involved, so...
And did you just keep going from there, saying, okay, we're back together for this event and to raise money? And you say, well, why don't we just keep going?
It was more of a step-by-step process, because once we committed to doing this first show, which was at the Hollywood Bowl in California, you know, in Hollywood, obviously.
Yeah.
It turned into a kind of a benefit tour where we kept adding shows for the cause.
Yeah.
And that got everybody talking about, well, what if we did do something again? Let's make a new record at some point. And it didn't happen instantly, but it paved the way. And within a few years, we were, you know, back making music together as the Doobie Brothers again.
Yeah, back. Now, you guys obviously are very popular in the United States and in Canada. Ever since you reunited, how do you guys travel, like to Europe, to the UK, to Australia, or received well there?
We do travel around. In fact, you know, just right now, I mean, we were just getting word the last couple of weeks or so about we're going to definitely be doing Australia, New Zealand, Japan, early part of next year probably, and we get to Europe whenever we can, not as often as, you know, we tour mostly North America.
Yeah,
but we get around though. We do.
I'll say, you know, they're keeping you guys very busy. Michael McDonald was in the band in the 80s, and he recorded a few hits, right, obviously. Now, he's got a very distinctive voice. Now, are you guys covering his songs? And if you are, how do you go about it?
Well, our last couple of shows that we did, just the last 2 days, we did them by having Michael McDonald be part of the band. So we still do shows with Michael occasionally, but when Michael's not there with us, we just don't do as many of his songs because his voice, like you're pointing out, he's so distinctive, his sound and his style. We do things like Take Him to the Streets, we'll do, and McDonald era songs like Depending on You, maybe, or different things from time to time too, but it changes. But in general, we kind of, you know, a lot of the time, other than Take Him to the Streets, which we pretty much always play, we kind of leave the Michael McDonald songs to where when we actually have Michael there with us.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. That's a good idea. You know, I was, you know, doing some work on looking you guys up. I mean, I've known your band since the 70s, but I wanted to see what you've been doing of late as far as recording goes, and something here really piqued my interest, and I got to go out and get it. In 2014, you guys went to Nashville. You recorded Southbound.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a collaborative, getting together with a bunch of Nashville musicians and country artists, a lot of big name country artists, and doing kind of revisiting some of our material of the band's hits, you know.
Oh,
and Michael McDonald, by the way, was part of that project too. So
really?
McDonald was. Yep, he's on the whole record. Yeah. So it's Michael and Pat and Tom and myself.
Well, to myself,
the various guest artists.
To myself and the fans out there, this is a must-buy album. What also, you guys, and these are two country bands that I really like and country artists, you worked with them was Brad Paisley and Zach Brown. Now, these guys are just amazing musicians. How was it working with these guys?
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, when we were approached, because, you know, we were approached with the idea by, the record company people and David Huff, who ended up producing the project, came to us, and we were going, well, do you think anybody likes us enough? We were kind of very gratified, as an understatement, to find out that all of these really great country people said, hey, you guys influenced me, and it was a really neat thing for us, honestly, to see the musical lack of boundaries, that existed once we got together with these people, and the enthusiasm from everybody. It was just great. A really good experience.
Yeah, definitely. And we're going to have to check that out. You yourself, back in 1982, I think after the Doobie Brothers disbanded, you went off and worked with a lot of people. I mean, you worked with Huey Lewis, Van Morrison, Steve Miller. Tell me a little bit about working with these people.
Well, it's funny. Actually, Van Morrison and Steve Miller are artists I worked with before I joined the Doobie Brothers.
Oh, okay.
Back in the 70s and the Grateful Dead. See, I worked with a lot of people before I ever joined the Doobies.
Right.
So some of that actually proceeds. In fact, Van Morrison, there's a connection there in that Van Morrison, I worked with him on two albums, on Tupelo Honey and St. Dominic's Review.
Right.
And Tupelo Honey produced Ted Templeman, his first hit record as a producer. Well, Teddy's the guy that produced all of the Doobies hits.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So I actually played on Teddy's first hit before the Doobies started having hits with Teddy. So there's a connection there. Anyway, I was lucky enough to work with some really great people. And then subsequently, after Doobies, I'd worked with people like Jenny Lou Harris and, a lot of country artists, John Michael Montgomery. And Ricky Skaggs, a lot of different people. I've done a lot of country session work outside of the Doobies and a lot of other work too. So I've been very fortunate to get to play with some great people.
Now, if you have your choice to play country or rock, where would you lean, or it doesn't matter to you?
Well, I love all kinds of music, but my roots are actually country. I grew up playing country music. A lot of people don't. I'm a native Californian, and a lot of people don't realize how big country music when I was growing up in the 1950s. Mm-hmm. That was it. And Merle Haggard is a native Californian too, so I rest my case.
Well, yeah, that's right. He's from Bakersfield. It's funny you mentioned Merle Haggard because he was here 2 years ago, and tomorrow on Saturday, his son Marty Haggard is playing here.
Oh, cool!
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah.
Well, Merle was in from the same culture I was, which was the oil field. And I call it called oil field trash, actually.
Yeah.
It was part of California back in the 1950s, and Merle is literally from Oildale, California. Yeah. And anyway, that's my natural roots.
Yeah.
Is country music. And when the Beatles came out, everybody wanted to have a band. I was like, hey, get the McPhee kid in the band because he already knows how to play.
Yeah.
Because I started playing very young. So
yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, one thing led to another, and I got introduced to rock and roll and jazz and blues and everything else, and it's all great.
Yeah.
I love it all.
It's great to be versatile in that respect. Do you guys have... Hold on. I went blank. Sorry about that. It happens.
I have that effect on people.
Yeah. I like to call, what I call them? I call them flat spots. You know the space between a song where there's nothing? Well, that's that's what I call it, that flat spot between. The documentary, thank you. There we go. The story of the Doobie Brothers. I love watching documentaries on bands, being a radio DJ and stuff. This came out in 2012. First of all, where can anyone find it? Is it on Netflix? Can we buy it? Where?
Oh, my God. I hate to confess that I'm probably the worst person to ask that question.
Oh, okay.
I don't really know, honestly. I mean, I don't follow things like merchandise and
No, I don't blame you
that closely. I tend to stay focused more on the music, but I don't know. But I know it's out there. It's probably on the internet through, I don't know.
Yeah, I would just go through the, well, I found it on the Doobie Brothers websites, you know, I'll do my own research. But first of all, the reason I bring it up is, what was the involvement? Did you guys have fun doing that?
Well, that's a good question, too. But, you know, documentaries or any kind of video work is not my favorite thing to do.
Okay,
you know?
Yeah.
Quite honestly, but the people are nice. It's just that I just feel like more like, hey, let the music speak for itself, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
But people want to know the stories behind it, and I guess I just don't find myself that interesting, so I always feel a little uncomfortable.
Yeah. Well, they sit you down in a chair, and they start. Do they want you to bring up the dirt in a band and what went wrong and who is doing this and that? Did you feel?
Well, you know, it depends on who's doing it. I think there was. You know, there are certain journalistic in the music business, journalistic, if you want to call it that, in terms of video or you know, just or written press or whatever, too, that tend to lean more towards, you know, beneath the music, or something. But some people have more integrity, and I you know, there've been some great documentaries, you know. So,
yeah. Oh yeah. Well.
Some of the stuff we've worked with some good people too. So
yeah,
you know,
because I don't know if you've seen the Eagles documentary. I mean, some of the stuff they were putting in there is like, oh my god, you know. I mean,
I saw some snippets and I had to stop watching because I found it very upsetting.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, I should
honestly
see that.
Yeah. And I know some of those guys, and I you know, I love them and I love their music, but it's hard to watch. To think about some of the strife that goes on, and you know, I just got through playing on with Timothy D. Schmidt on his new project. He's got a new solo album coming out.
Right,
Timothy from the Eagles. So I just got through working with him. Of course, Timothy's one of the ones that there's never been any conflict with. I think in the band up there.
Yeah, there was.
But some of the other stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, because I know Don Felder and I like him, and I know some of the other guys and I like them, and it's hard to watch people that you like going through when they don't get along.
Yeah, and they're trashing each other on it. Yeah, exactly. I mean, some people get some pleasure out of watching it, which I find very interesting. A little while ago, I was listening to a radio program with a psychologist. And they were doing music research. And what they did was, you know, your standard question, you're stranded on a desert island and you can pick 10 records or 10 favorite artists. What would you choose? What they found out was, which was I found quite interesting, is that once the people they were doing the research with chose the 10 artists and albums that they liked, they asked them, what era in your life did you choose? Why did you choose these albums? And most of the people, probably over 80% of them, said, well, that's the music I listened to as a teenager. And which is quite interesting. And they said that the music you'd listen to when you're a teenager will influence you. Your taste as you go along, your taste may change as you get older, but you will always revert back to those original albums or original artists, which I find quite interesting because I started thinking about it. And I was a teenager in the early 70s, and my brothers and I had sat down and listened to the university radio show. And what was cool about them, if you phoned them up, they'd play anything you want. So we would always argue, what Doobie Brothers song are we going to ask for? And honestly, it was really funny. Oh, no, China Grove. No, we asked for that last week, you know? And so we'd fight back and forth. But the first album we went out and bought, once we got enough money, was The Captain and Me. And it's still in my collection today. And to us, you know what? It was those driving guitar hooks that just got us going. And most of the music I listen today comes from that sound that, you guys have developed. What if I ask you the same question?
Wow. As far as my favorite music just about the concept in general?
The concept.
Teen years being the most...
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly that.
Well, yeah, the teen years, by the time I was a teenager, that was like in the, you know, early to mid-60s.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm dating myself a little bit here, but anyway, I grew up playing music though, so I'd already from before I could walk, I think I was really literally playing music before I could walk.
Okay.
My dad put a ukulele in my hand, was showing me chords before I could walk, and then instruments around the house. So I was playing from a very early age, but I was listening to and playing country. And then, like I said, when the Beatles came out around 63 or 64, when it hit the States, that started exposing me to a whole other thing. And so my teenage years, at that point, I was getting so much input from so many directions, because then it was like, hey, you got to hear the blues, because, you know, they influenced the Rolling Stones, or, you know, the whole British invasion.
Yeah.
Turned, I think, a lot of people, including myself, onto maybe some American music we might not have otherwise heard. So it's interesting. But all of that has stuck with me, and it really expanded my my musical consciousness, if you will, beyond country. Although I still love country, it's great, though, that I was able to get all that other stuff. But I'm still, you know, yeah, it does resonate. I think the teen years, it is just very formative, and,
yeah,
you know, going through all the things we go through, the emotions of,
yeah,
you know, first girlfriends or whatever it is and all that stuff. Yeah, I think it does stick with us probably more than any other. It's got to influence us more than any other point in our lives. I think that's probably true.
Yeah, and with you being a musician, okay, more so than us, when you're, you know, let's say, for example, you're in the studio with Timothy B. Schmidt, as you just mentioned earlier, do you find that if you're creating a piece of music with somebody that you listen to it after and you go, oh, gosh, that sounds like something from the 60s or something like that, or the 50s. Do you still find it's influencing the way you write music?
I think, well, as far as all of the things that I was exposed to throughout my life, they still influence me. And it's probably not something one can find as far as, like, as a musician, where does it come from?
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm not sure. It's like, God knows where something pops out, and it's like, somebody goes, that's the right part for that song. That's what it needs when you're in a session and coming in. And then you go, well, I don't know where I got that idea. You know? So it's hard to say where the inspiration and influences, how it all interacts and comes out in the final, you know, whatever the result of interaction with other musicians is, you know. That book makes the process really fascinating and still fun after all these years.
Oh, absolutely. How would I word this? Guitars. I like guitars. I'm not a very good guitar player. That's why I'm in radio, because I can't play guitar too well, but I try. But I have a lot of friends that are musicians. A lot of them are. So I'm really, I love guitars. I just love them.
I'm still working on it myself.
Well, there you go. What's your favorite guitar? What do you got?
Oh, my favorite actual individual instrument?
Oh, yeah. You know, Les Paul, a Telecaster.
Well, I still have a Telecaster that I've had since I was basically a kid. I was like maybe 13, I think, when I got it.
Yeah.
And I still have that. It's the guitar I played on. I played all the lead guitar on Elvis Costello's My Name Is True album, including the song Allison. That's the guitar I used on it. It was a guitar I'd had since I was 13, and I still have it. So that Telecaster has a special place for me.
That's your go-to guitar.
Yeah, but I play pedal steel as well, and so pedal steel, in a lot of ways, is sort of my favorite instrument to play, but I don't get to play it as often as I wish I could. But I love pedal steel, and I've got a bunch of them, but I recently did some work on a Fender 400 that was made in pre-1959, you know, and it just sounds incredible, you know.
Oh, that's
enough. So it's just hard to pick a single favorite instrument. I also have a Les Paul that I got, that Les Paul signed for me once.
Oh, get out. Are you serious?
A Les Paul custom, yeah. I was producing a record. I was working at Capitol Studios in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And somebody came in and said, hey, Les Paul's coming in because they're putting out a box set or a compilation, you know,
yeah,
of all of his stuff. and he's coming into the building today. You want to meet him? And I'm like, are you kidding? Yeah, I'd love to meet him. And I happened to have my Les Paul custom with me.
So they
took me out and introduced me to him, and I hesitantly said, Mr. Paul, I hope it's okay, but if it's not, just say so. I happen to have my Les Paul custom here. Would you feel like signing it for me? And if not, that's fine. I said, no, John, bring it on. Well, I have my Les Paul custom signed by Les Paul.
Oh, wow.
So that's pretty special.
That one must stay home locked in a case somewhere, I would think.
Actually, it's hanging on the wall in my studio.
Good spot, yeah.
Display. It's on display. But I'll still play it from time to time.
Oh, absolutely. Do you have a big guitar collection?
I've ended up with a lot of guitars, but I'm not one of those guys that really collects. I know some people who are, you know, that really have made a point of, you know, seeking out their guitars and collecting and doing this and that. I've just, by virtue of just turning into an old man, I've ended up with a lot of instruments just bit by bit through the years. So I do have a lot, but I'm not like I say, I'm not like a real collector.
Yeah, over the years, I'm sure you get given some, buy some, and then you realize, oh my gosh, your insurance probably costs more than what they're all worth after a while.
It's pretty crazy. I don't have enough room for, I mean, I have to have storage facilities and stuff like that. That's how many I've ended up with.
Oh, wow.
But it's just crazy. Well, for one thing, like when we tour, for example, I have to have four of whatever my main guitar is. I can't just have one. I have to have four. Because I have to have a main and a backup, and then we have a separate set of gear for if our main gear can't get to the next town in time. We have what we call our B gear.
Oh yeah,
and mine is replicates the A gear. So I have to have four of each. So that'll start piling up some guitars after a while too.
You know, but that makes sense when you're touring, though. Like, I mean, there have been musicians coming into Canada, for example. It happened this summer, and I can't remember the band, but their gear got held up at the border. You know,
so, yeah, that can happen. It can happen.
Yeah.
So we've been pretty lucky through the years. So we try to have our paperwork and everything together enough that doesn't happen. But you got to be careful. But we have, you know. Like I say, I've ended up with a lot of instruments, partly because I just have to have replicated gear for touring. You know?
Well, actually, it's a good idea. It makes sense. After Texas, you guys are in Niagara Falls this week, I think, coming? The next week coming?
That's our next... we go home for a few days, and then we come right up to see you guys. Up to Canada, as I call it.
Canada. I like that one.
We're coming up to Canada, and then we'll be in Montreal.
Good. Yeah, because I think the last time you were here, I'm trying to remember, I went to the show. It was north of Montreal. I think it was 15, 20
years ago. That festival, that was fantastic.
Yeah, that was the last time you were here. And, mm-hmm. and now you're back, not this Saturday, but the Saturday after that. Do you need any French phrases to help you out when you're on stage? I can teach you.
As many as possible.
to reassure you, don't worry about it, really. If you could say bonjour, Montréal, you're good. Because, you know what?
I think we're okay.
Yeah, but a large part of the audience are English-speaking, because there's, you know, a fair amount of English-speaking in Montreal anyways. And the French people that go there, a lot of them are bilingual anyways. And all they care about is, you know, they'll just yell out rock and roll. That's all they want to hear.
Music is supposed to be the universal language, so hopefully that'll carry it.
Yeah, exactly.
A little ways.
Yeah, and we have, don't worry, we have no snow yet. That's a couple, you know, a couple months away. But it's, let me see, we average 60 to 70 degrees this time of the year, so it's not too bad. You know.
Oh, I love it up there. It's beautiful, so I'm looking forward to it.
Well, yeah, the leaves will be starting to change. Are you going to have any time off after you leave here, or do you guys off to another venue?
You know, I believe that we might have a day off after the show where we get to hang around, and I've got have some friends up there, so I'm going to hopefully get to spend a little time with them. So.
Oh, that's good. You know what? If you need a tour guide, just let me know. We'll take you around.
Okay.
You know?
For that.
I got one off the record here. I'm going to record it, but we'll probably edit it out later because I was talking to the lady at your management company, and she didn't want me to ask this question. Unfortunately, you can bring it back to the other two guys in the band, to Patrick and Tom. Back in 1973, it was probably the first time the Doobie Brothers played Montreal, so I think it was before your time in the band.
That is before my time. Yeah. I'm still the new guy. I've only been there 38 years.
And they probably still bug you about it. The Doobie Brothers opened for T-Rex in 1973 here in Montreal, and there was a Montreal band called Mash McCann. They opened up, then it was the Doobie Brothers, then it was T-Rex. And after the show, I only got a little bit of the story. The Doobie Brothers ended up going, well, we're not waiting for T-Rex to hang out after the show. So they went with Mash McCann to a farmhouse here in Montreal and left the T-Rex behind and went and partied with those guys.
I can believe it.
Yeah. So that was their first time here, because one of the guys at Mash McCann, actually going to be talking to him later, he's a friend of mine. He went on to work with the Canadian group April Wine, and they told me about
him.
I was with him on the weekend, and they said, well, if you're talking to Doobie Brothers, you got to mention this story to him and see if they remember.
Oh, well, well, darn, I wish I could speak to the issue as one who was there, like if I were Pat or Tom, but unfortunately you're stuck with me for the moment.
Yeah, well, just bring
but
it
I'm sure that Pat and Tom would love to reminisce about that stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
sounds like good times.
Yeah. So well, that's it, John. That's all I got to ask you. It's been a great interview, and thank you for taking the time out of your busy day. I know you just finished sound check and everything. It's very graceful of you.
Well, no problem. I'm happy to do it. Thank you so much.
All right. So we'll hopefully...
And, are we going to see you at the show? Are you going to be at the event? Or?
Yeah, I'm going to try to get to the event. I should be... When is it? Next Saturday. I should be able to.
Okay. Well, if you can, please come back and say hi.
Yeah, no, you know what? I'm going to talk to the Venco up here who brings the show in, and it was working with our radio station. So, yeah, definitely going to check that out, see if they can get me backstage. I'd love to go and see you guys.
Then you can talk to Pat and Tom.
Yes. There, I got an excellent reason. Well, I'd love to see you too as well. But thanks for taking the time, John.
My pleasure. Once again, thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.